Representatives of Teddy Roosevelt's Justice Department attended the meetings. Nonetheless, the agreements didn't work, as some firms couldn't be trusted not to undersell others. Having failed in the realm of economics, Kolko observes, the efforts of the United States Steel Group were to be shifted to politics. By 1909, the steel tycoon Andrew Carnegie was writing in the New York Times in favor of government control of the steel industry. In June 1911, Judge Gary told Congress, "I believe we must come to enforced publicity, socialization, and government control, even as to prices." The Democrats, still clinging to classical liberal notions, rejected the proposal as semi-socialistic. One need only look at Herbert Croly's Promise of American Life to see how fundamentally fascistic progressive economics were. Croly was contemptuous of competition. Trust-busting was a fool's errand. If a corporation got so big that it became a monopoly, Croly didn't believe it should be broken up. Rather, it should be nationalized. Big business contributed enormously to American economic efficiency, he explained. Cooperation was Croly's watchword. It should be the effort of all civilized societies to substitute cooperation for competitive methods. As a philosophical and practical matter, Croly opposed the very conception of the neutral rule of law for business. Since all legislation was ultimately aimed at discriminating against one interest or another, a view revived by critical legal theorists more than a century later, the state should abandon the charade of neutrality and instead embrace a national program that put the good of the collective ahead of the individual. As we've seen, World War I offered a golden opportunity for Croly's agenda. Big business and the Wilson administration formed the Council of National Defense, or CND, according to Wilson, for the purpose of redesigning the whole industrial mechanism in the most effective way. "It is our hope," Hudson Motor Car Company's Howard Coffin explained in a letter to the DuPonts, "that we may lay the foundation for that closely knit structure, industrial, civil, and military, which every thinking American has come to realize is vital to the future life of this country, in peace and in commerce, no less than in possible war." When the war broke out, the CND was largely folded into the War Industries Board, or WIB. Run by dollar-a-year men from the world of finance and business, the WIB set prices, trade quotas, wages, and, of course, profits. Trade associations were formed along vaguely syndicalist lines. Business willed its own domination, forged its bonds, and policed its own subjection, wrote Grosvenor Clarkson, a WIBer and historian of the effort. The aim was for the concentration of commerce, industry, and all the powers of government,